Now let's begin with Karen Carniel-Tambor and her first interview since being named co-CIO for Bridgewater, the world's largest hedge fund firm. We discussed how future recessions may play out more painfully than in the past.
I think the next big risk is recessions that are deeper and longer than what we've been accustomed to. Everyone investing today has had their whole investing career over a period of significant disinflation and a time where every single time there was any kind of downturn in the economy, central banks could just hop right in and reverse it. They didn't face any kind of trade-off. And we saw it the most in COVID. When the economy's going down, reversing it is a win-win for everybody because growth is a disaster and there is no inflation. Just ease everything you can. So what that means is recessions could never be deep and long. They were always quick and shallow because there was always a savior to save the day. And we're going into a world where that's just not what it's going to look like anymore, where every time the economy slows, it'll be painful because central banks will want to ease and at the same time will be struggling with how, you know, sticky inflation has been. And that'll be exacerbated by the political situation.
Paint a picture for me about what the world really looks like under this scenario. I mean, what are the ultimate implications of, you know, maybe potentially more frequent recessions or deeper ones?
Well, I think if you step back, one of the really meaningful changes that's happened that's hard for all of us to kind of digest day to day is that for many, many years around the world, growth was kind of more or less a pretty good proxy for people's lives getting better. If you had good growth, people's lives got better. And about 10 years ago, this started changing where you could get totally reasonable growth numbers. And yet anything that had to do with, you know, the quality of the 60, 80% of people's lives that weren't at the very top weren't really moving in line with that. It just wasn't happening in the same way. But that's kind of changed the game and made it so getting to the point where, what are we really doing? We try to avoid recessions. We try to get people's quality of life to keep going up. If you're going to have recessions now, they're going to feel really different because now suddenly political actors are part of the solution. They see a role. They've experienced what happened in COVID and they realize that they can impact the outcome. So they're much more likely to step in, have big fiscal expansions and try to impact the social and environmental implications of downturns or of problems that we see. You see this now with what's happening with war in Ukraine. You saw it in COVID with all the social issues. And then monetary policy, on one hand, will be less important because fiscal will be doing what it's doing. On the other hand, they're going to be in an even tougher spot because they'll have this much more entrenched inflation because you have secular inflationary pressures where you didn't for 40 years. And they'll have fiscal policymakers stimulating at the same time. So they'll be forced to tighten a lot more than they would have otherwise wanted to, or ease a lot less than they otherwise want to. And then those become recessions that are much more difficult, much more painful. And how difficult and painful they are for whether individual people and households or environmental outcomes or market outcomes will depend a lot more about what fiscal policymakers end up doing and how they navigate that situation.
We're talking about that at a time where there's a lot of concerns around not just the U.S. government debt load, but the debt loads around the world. Is there really firepower behind government balance sheets to intervene?
I believe that there's firepower until the market punishes them and tells them that there isn't, right? So we started seeing this in the UK, where the market basically said, you've gone too far. And how do we see this? You start having rising bond yields, falling currency, basically the market saying, this is too much, this is unacceptable. And they stepped back and they didn't do what they were going to do, which the market basically told them is irresponsible. And so we don't really know how the market is going to treat it. But so far, most countries in the rich part of the world, in the developed world, have been able to do massive, massive fiscal intervention, run very high debt levels without the market really saying this is not something that's going to work.
More frequent, potentially deeper recessions. Can you give a sense of the scope of that? What does deeper mean? What does more frequent mean?
When you have a recession that the central bank can just solve quickly, because they'll go and they'll ease aggressively in the first sight of a downturn, right? You get a world where every time you have something go wrong in the economy, we get used to the fact that it just gets solved within a few months, even when it's really, really bad. And so these are very non-painful recessions in a very core way, because the most important firepower in the world, the central bank, and then, you know, fiscal policymakers could step in and try to make them not painful and go away very quickly. And we're moving into a spot where there are actual trade-offs. Central banks can do that if they want, but they will live with much higher inflation than they think is prudent to tolerate. So they're less likely to. And that means if you're in a recession, for the first time in decades, you'll be in a recession that might be hard to get out of. You might be kind of stuck in. And the stagflation years where that occurred are so far behind most of our memories. I think that these risks are exacerbated by how fast the pace of deglobalization is going to be and how problematic geopolitical tensions end up being. So if you look at what globalization had done, you had decades where the fact that the world came closer and closer together was a very powerful deflationary force. You were constantly taking goods and services that were being produced and move them to the cheapest possible place. And it made the whole world cheaper constantly, brought more and more labor online. And that was one of these big deflationary winds in the back that allowed central banks to keep coming in and easing when things were tough. Now, we know that the world can't re-globalize again, so that deflationary force is behind us, but you can decide how fast are you going to deglobalize. Are you going to literally go and try to like tear apart all of those forces that put the world together in these years? And we don't know yet to what extent that'll happen. And that'll determine just how inflationary it is. And the biggest wild card here, of course, is how difficult the relationship gets with China, because China's so deeply embedded in supply chains. There's a big difference between having to kind of modestly cut them out or just have some double dues versus actually undoing, actually decoupling from China. That could be a very inflationary event that exacerbates this whole environment very significantly.
Who will suffer most in this scenario?
The people that suffer the most are usually new entrants into the workforce. You see this in sort of the type of lost decade you have in countries that go through deeper recessions where there is no kind of fiscal help that offsets this. But when you have people who need to be joining the workforce, and there ends up being a prolonged recession in those critical years. And by the time there is significant hiring, you know, years have passed and they haven't really started their careers. It's very hard to get those careers back on track and to get productivity, and you can kind of have a lost generation. There's a lot of things that the system can do to offset that, but that's the risk.